everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Daily Coast The Brief. It's our weekly show about politics. I am Marcos Melitzis. I am here with Carrie Alleveld. And Carrie and I today will be talking about Florida. Florida has been in the news recently because the Florida Supreme Court made two important rulings earlier this week. One is they allowed Florida's draconian six-week abortion law to stand, meaning it might be amongst the most restrictive in the country. And simultaneously, it allowed a ballot initiative that would legalize abortion in the state. So basically what it said is the legislature passed this restriction. We're going to let that stand, but we're going to let the voters make the final call. Now, this was a big deal, particularly the ballot initiative part, because there was real effort by state Republicans to prevent the court, prevent this ballot initiative from going to the ballot. Why? Yeah. You can guess it, because it's going to, first of all, they don't like it, right? They want women's bodily autonomy restricted. They want to control that. But two, they also know the political ramifications, the electoral ramifications of having a very popular abortion rights amendment on the ballot at the same time where Florida has several contested races. So the Biden campaign claims Florida is in play. And Carrie and I will talk a little bit about that. I'm skeptical about that, but it does not need to be in play at the presidential level for it to matter in November. We have one of our very few Senate pickup opportunities. Rick Scott, the incumbent Republican senator, is incredibly unpopular, one of the most unpopular. I don't think he's ever won a race by more than 1.5 points, and I don't think he's ever hit 50%. And we also have a couple of House races, competitive House races in the battle for the House. And that abortion amendment itself is incredibly important. And Florida requires a 60% margin for a ballot initiative to pass. So it's not a simple majority. So these are all incredibly important races. And Carrie has been covering this for Daily Coast and covering it very, very ably. And we're going to stick with Florida. Today she wrote about it. Arizona. And I was like, ooh, it was a great piece. But no, we're going to stick with Florida today.
No, let's throw it all out. We'll go to Arizona. No, there's so much good material, right?
We should
stay on Florida, because it's like a bomb erupted, not just in Florida, but like nationally, right? So I don't know. Do you want me to start?
I get you've been writing about this. You actually interviewed the Democratic Senate candidate in Florida. So I'm curious about your takeaways on that and how that sort of all wraps around now, because you talked to her before the state Supreme Court decision allowing this ballot initiative to take place. Things are happening. They're a bit in flux. I don't think there's a lot of polling we can point to right now because things are in flux, but it looks pretty intriguing from the outside. And so, Carrie, you've been deep in there. What are you seeing?
Well, yeah. So just in terms of the polling, right, I don't know that there's any like new polling since yesterday. And I want to be clear about one thing. It's not really a material difference, but the Supreme Court ruled on a 15-week ban. But then also once they approved that and said, yes, this can stand constitutionally, then the 6-week ban that Governor DeSantis signed into law 30 days from that ruling will go into effect. So it's effectively a 6-week ban is going to be in place, but it's not quite in place yet. It will be in place in about a month. Okay. But that aside, we do have polling about abortion rights in general from Florida, right? And you will be shocked to learn, of course, that a solid, very solid majority, 67%, support, you know, in terms of like, this was a poll taken, I think, last year by like Florida Atlantic University. And then there's another one by another Florida university. They were reputable polls. So 67% basically support a woman's right to choose, right? And then
this was 67% last year.
I think it was last year. Yeah, it might have been 2022, polling, but it's
In civics polling, support for abortion rights nationally has gone up in this last year because people are starting to realize what it actually means to lose it. So it might even be higher today. 67 a year ago. That's crazy. Or 2 years ago. That's amazing.
Yeah, right. So that's solid. Like I get the feeling, and I don't, you know, I'm not like a Florida, you know, savant or anything. You know, it's not like I really know, but like I get that. Yeah, I get the feeling that like the electorate down there is kind of like, don't tell me what to do. I mean, you know, like that's kind of ingrained in the Florida electorate is don't tell me what to do. Like that's why people go there a lot of the times is that they don't want to be told what to do. Right. So they don't really want the government in their business, supposedly. Right. That is what Floridians, I think. And so the other thing they did poll about there is polling about the ballot measure specifically. And I think, you know, around 62% or something like that support the ballot measure. So there is a chance that they meet this 60% threshold, right? But it's going to be, you know, 60% isn't 50%. Is that really true? Is it really? Is it?
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
I did not realize that. Okay, so I just wanted to make sure that was
no, real. But it makes it even more important for supporters to get out the vote, which sort of adds an extra level of impetus. And it's not as we're up by 10 points, 20 points, we don't have to worry about it, and Trump is going to win easily in the state, so I'm not even going to vote. No, it actually votes. These votes are going to matter, and it's going to require ticket splitters, which is going to be fascinating to see how that plays out. Maybe at the presidential level, certainly at the Senate level.
Well, so I can tell you that when I interviewed former Representative Debbie Mucarcel Powell, right, who hasn't necessarily won the nomination yet, but is the clear front runner, has the party backing, and, you know, it's all signs suggest that she will come August be the Democratic nominee. And she's been doing, you know, really good fundraising numbers, et cetera. So she was keen to talk about abortion as an issue for obvious reasons. And one of the things, first of all, she framed it, you know, she framed the ballot measure as an incredible, quote unquote, incredible opportunity for voters to have their say about whether or not, you know, women get to make this decision for themselves in conjunction with their, you know, partners and their doctor. But she also said something along the lines of, it's going to be meaningless if we pass this ballot measure, but also don't vote out Rick Scott, right? Her Republican rival, who's currently the sitting senator there.
Great argument. Seriously, a great argument.
Yeah, great. Right. It's meaningless. And then she expanded on that and said, because he supports a national abortion ban. So, you know, he not only has said, and he's hedging on this a little bit since it's become such a big issue, just like he's hedging on ending Social Security and Medicare since it's become such a big issue. But, you know, it's not, hindsight's always 20/20 when you think you might lose an election because of your radical ideas. But he said at the time that Governor Ron DeSantis signed the 6-week abortion ban into law, that if he had been governor still, he would have signed it into law, right? So he supported the state's 6-week abortion ban. And he also supports a national abortion ban, though he's kind of like in the 15-week realm. Like he co-sponsored, I think, one of Lindsey Graham's efforts to do a national abortion ban or whatever. So what Mucarcel Powell is saying is it's useless for us to pass the abortion rights amendment as a ballot measure and then also fail to vote Rick Scott out of office because he's going to be pushing for a national abortion ban at the federal level. So it's a great argument, right? And
I mean, they're one and the same, right? Yeah, it's dumb. It's vote for somebody, vote to protect abortion rights, and then vote for the guy who's promised to curtail abortion rights. It's just logically nonsensical.
Nonsensical, right? So she has, they have the benefit now. I mean, I think that they have the makings of, you know, Rick Scott, like you said, he's never won a general election by more than 1.2 points. Okay. So barely over 1 point.
Two governor's races in one Senate race right now. So that's three races. It's a real sample size.
It's a real sample size. Yes. He's a self funder. He spends a bunch of his own money and he still can't make himself, you know, particularly popular.
He looks like a villain. He looks like Lex Luthor. I mean, like, he's just
right.
He's not a appealing character.
He obviously made a big deal of his 12-point or 11-point plan to, quote unquote, save America that would end Social Security and Medicare in the state. It would sunset it. And then he went back and tried to, you know, have a do-over. And then like a year later, when he was like, oh, gee, I'm going to be facing re-election in a state where there's like 5 million seniors. Right. And maybe
the
this
state of seniors.
Yeah. Right. Maybe this isn't such a good idea. And so then he like out of the federal initiatives that he tried to, he was proposing to sunset in order to save money, he decided to pull Social Security and Medicare out of that, right? But we all know where his heart lies. I mean, he was clear where his heart lies. He defended that thing for a solid year practically before he came back and tried to like amend history, right?
And just for a little context, Carrie, let me, if you don't mind, his 10-point proposal, was it 10 or 12?
It was originally 11, then it became 12. And so every time I say it, I think I'm saying it wrong. Whatever. Right. It was a lot of points.
Yeah, his multi-point proposal came in the context of two things. One, he was trying to oust Mitch McConnell as Senate Majority Leader. So he was sort of trying to fill a void. But that void also existed because Trump's Republican Party does not have a platform. So they literally stand for nothing. So that proposal was his attempt to take a leadership role inside the party and basically say, I'm the person who's going to provide a blueprint for what we can rally around. And one of those things was eliminating Social Security, which was wild. And I remember Mitch McConnell at the time laughing at him saying, yeah, this is a good proposal for somebody who needs to run for re-election in Florida. Like that was Mitch McConnell's only response. And Rick Scott's leadership bid sort of fizzled out because, I mean, he's just not a very likable, popular guy. And that lives forever. I mean, you know, Democrats are going to make huge deal about that.
And I will say Mitch McConnell at the time was cringing because they thought they had a good path to winning the Senate majority in 2022 midterms. And he was like, he flat out said, no, we're not going to do that if we take back the majority, because he knew it was like it would be, you know, it would be 100% loser for them if they were like, oh, yeah, embracing this idea. Now, let's be clear. The Republicans cannot get this off of their brains. Right. You know, Social Security, Republicans definitely have an eye on ending Social Security or amending it or whatever, and Medicare. But let's go back to Florida for a second. And this abortion, you know, sort of like grenade that just went off in the state. The Debbie McCarthy Powell's Senate campaign isn't the only Democratic campaign that sees opportunity here, right? The Biden campaign in quick succession, and they were obviously very ready, as I think, you know, the Senate campaign was, very ready for this decision, right? And had things ready to go. They immediately dropped a 30-second spot, and which we'll listen to in just a second because we have it queued up for you. Walter, our producer, queued it up for us generously. But they have a 30-second spot on abortion. And then they also did a campaign surrogate call with reporters, and they released this memo talking about how they have an opening in Florida now, and partly based on abortion, partly based on Social Security and Medicare, partly based on gun control and, you know, how many tragedies have happened in Florida, mass shootings have happened in Florida. So there's other things, but let's listen just a minute to that Biden ad, and then we can talk about it for a second. And Marcos, you and I can give our thoughts on what we think about their chances in Florida after that.
Yep, let's roll the ad.
Because for 54 years, they were trying to get Roe v. Wade terminated, and I did it, and I'm proud to have done it.
In 2016, Donald Trump ran to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, in 2024, he's running to pass a national ban on a woman's right to choose. I'm running to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again, so women have a federal guarantee to the right to choose. Donald Trump doesn't trust women. I do. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Carrie, we've been talking about abortion and Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision since before. And our theory of the case was that once women saw that right curtailed, this is like in early 2022, maybe even late 2021, right? We've been talking about this for a long time. And our theory of the case was that once women realized that right was actually, it wasn't the boy who cried wolf, that it actually was going away, that it would activate them electorally in ways that Republicans would regret. And while everybody was waiting for a 2022 red wave, Republican landslide victories in the midterm election, the Democrats actually held their own to overperforming in historical terms, dramatically overperformed historical terms for the midterm of a party in power in the White House. Nothing's changed, Carrie. Like, I mean, we've been talking about this. We keep looking at what's going to happen this November. It's the same freaking issues. It's abortion and it's democracy. Those are going to animate the left. So one of the things that was fascinating, and you brought this up in the previous episode, is that I think it was from Sarah Longwell focus group, is that a lot of people still didn't connect the fact that it was Trump's fault that we had lost abortion protections, abortion rights. And I've certainly seen it in online places and where people gather, where they blame Biden because Biden was president. They don't understand how the Supreme Court works. They don't understand that it was Trump's justices who pushed it. So it was always going to be clear that that ad that we just heard, that ad is going to run in very many, you know, different versions of it in nonstop rotation from this moment where that ad just launched until the November election, and not just at the presidential level, but at every, you know, House, Senate, governor, all across the board, that version of that ad is going to run. And Trump bragging about ending abortion rights, and that's not the only time he's done it, right? So I'm sure they can pull out different versions of him bragging about it.
That CNN town hall that happened last year where everybody was like, oh, my God, I hate CNN. Why did they give him that forum to say all that, spew all that, you know, awful, all those awful things.
You
I looked
it.
At that and I was like, campaign fucking gold, man, campaign gold. So, you know, he's been bragging about this, and people, depending on what kind of what tenor they want in their ad, whether they want it a little bit, you know, more intimate the way the Biden ad just was and down key, or whether they want the upbeat version of Trump yelling at people, no one could do it, but I did it, you know, that type of thing. But the first thing, right, this is, they got all kinds
great
of
Trump
sound.
Great Trump impersonation there, Carrie. Loved it.
You can see why I didn't make it in stand-up. I mean, I had a lot of gusto, but just like the skill set.
Oh, you got the vibe. You got the vibe. That's what matters. You don't need to get his actual voice. The vibe.
Yeah. So I will say, so that was kind of like this ad that we just listened to is the Biden campaign's opening salvo on this issue. And the first thing they are doing is letting Trump take credit for ending abortion, right? And that's the first, their first hurdle for the campaign is reminding all these people who either didn't know or kind of have brain fog about it or kind of like don't really believe that Trump is, you know, anti-abortion. They're starting the education campaign with, okay, if you don't believe it, we'll just give you Trump and he can take credit for it. And then start listening to what we have to say about this issue, right? So this is the first part of that. So, you know, Marcos, what do you think about this idea of the Biden campaign having an opening, a real shot at Florida, which, what was it? Barack Obama won it by 3 points. Is that right?
Three and a half points. Yeah. He won it. What was that? Back in 2008. At the time though, Democratic registration outnumbered Republican registration in the state of Florida by about 700,000. Today, Republican registration outnumbers Democratic registration by about 800,000, somewhere around there. So it's a different Florida. Obviously, Florida has moved to the right, and not a lot of people see it as a swing state. But here's where things get interesting. Oh, and to add, if Biden wins Florida, he's already won all the swing states, plus North Carolina, maybe places like Montana or Alaska. Like, it's landslide territory, right? So in a normal year, Florida's sort of become that far out, Ohio, Iowa, right? These states would, it would be landslide. So it'd be great. But here's the thing. Florida is extremely expensive state. Biden has a lot of money. Trump is broke, right? So if they can start making it interesting and even just like visiting the state and getting the Trumps worried about that, because there's zero path to victory for Trump without Florida. So if they have to put very scarce resources, both in money and in time, into campaigning in Florida, that's a net positive, because that's time that Trump cannot spend, or money he cannot spend in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia, right? So that's number one. But two, I'm less worried about the presidential, because like I said, if he won Florida, he's won a bunch of stuff and we're off to the races. And maybe we get to go to bed early that night. That would be nice. I mean, I'm not going to.
You know, if we won that type of landslide, there's no way you're going to bed early. It's an all-nighter, and boy, is it juicy.
All right, but that's a fun all-nighter. That's a party all-nighter, as opposed to, are we at a funeral wake again? Because And
that's a rave, right? That's a rave
but,
at that point.
But the other piece is that we want to win these competitive House races. We want to win that Senate race. And we need people to split their tickets or maybe not vote at the top. We need more people to vote for Debbie than to vote for Rick Scott. Yep. And the narrower the gap at the top, the easier it is to get those party switchers. So if it's a 10-point Trump win, it's hard to see how the Democrats pull off the Senate race. Making up a 10-point gap is, in modern polarized political politics, that's tough. If it's 4 or 5 points, yeah, that's within the realm of possibility. Then things get really interesting.
Well, right. And let's remember, too, the other thing that Democrats have working for them is they just flipped the mayoral seat in Jacksonville, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that right? And then there was another special election that Democrats just won there, and it's escaping me. But that all of that infrastructure that went into those two special elections, which were, you know, which were a heavy lift for Democrats, is infrastructure that then pays forward into, you know, this coming election in November. And the resources that will pull in, right, pour into Florida in order to pull more voters out is going to be, you know, I'm sure not probably at least tens of millions and maybe in the hundreds, right? The outside resources to win that ballot measure. And the other thing we know is that at the same time, In Florida, not only is there the abortion rights ballot measure, but there's going to be a marijuana legalization ballot measure. And both of those ballot measures are the types of ballot measures that draw out young folks heavily, who tend to lean, you know, 2-to-1 almost Democratic. And, you know, I worry, sometimes some people are worried about whether or not Trump is eating into Biden's support among Latinos, among Black Americans, among young voters. I worry less about that. I'm not saying it couldn't be true or that it can't, you know, that there's no possibility of that. I worry personally less about that than people not getting to the polls, right? And so this is a situation where this type of ballot measure is exactly the type of ballot measure that pulls tons of typically Democratic leaning individuals to the polls. And as long as they're there, you know, for a lot of them, well, why not cast a ballot for Biden? You know, so that type of thing.
Now, historically, this is kind of a quirk in, or not a quirk, but an interesting tidbit about marijuana ballot initiatives is that they historically have not helped Democrats because Democrats haven't wrapped themselves around the issue, right? Marijuana legalization's got like 75% approval rating. And for whatever reason, Democrats are afraid to talk about legalizing it. And I suspect because a lot of elected officials like Biden are old and they're still, you know, that their thinking hasn't evolved. They haven't lived in a world where this is normalized and who cares if somebody smokes a joint, which is too bad because had Democrats sort of wrapped themselves around the issue, then they would be closely identified and then that would be a better connection for those young voters who otherwise don't really understand. So a lot of ballot initiatives, literally that's the only thing they're voting for. Like they don't even understand the rest of the ballot. They're so detached from the politics and from the parties. And there's no champion, there's no Democrat who's the champion of marijuana legalization, just like, you know, we had Democrats who were champions of marriage equality or champions of, you know, immigration reform, whatever, right? Like there are people who make that the issue. I can't think of a single Democrat who's like, this is my issue and I'm going to push this across the finish line. And it's unfortunate because it's an easy one. The polling is so clear cut on this.
There is a Democrat who did that and I can't remember who it was. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's so great, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes my point.
It's not the norm. It's not the norm. Well, but where Democrats definitely are, you know, clear about where they stand is on a woman's right to choose, right? So anyone who goes.
And that's why they're benefiting, right? Like when
that's right. But the other thing is, I am somewhat skeptical about. I mean, I don't want to say it's impossible. I'm somewhat skeptical about the idea that Florida is in play for Biden. I do think it's entirely worthwhile for them to make it close in the polling, but for the reason that you said, for Team Trump to have to play there financially because they are broke, and that's going to be a problem for them, right? But the other thing is that, you know, I think what they want to use, the Biden campaign, I think, wants to use Florida for several things. One is it's such a clear illustration of Republican overreach, right? Uh-huh. There's the ballot measure that voters get to vote on, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's like this whipsaw thing of, and the 6-week abortion ban goes into...
And 6 weeks into, is useless, right? It's essentially a full ban.
It's essentially a full ban, right? And because most people don't even know they're pregnant by then. So, you know, it's like this whipsaw situation, right? Where it was like, yeah, okay, so voters will have their say. But when Republicans get to dictate to voters what is going to happen, they get a virtual, you know, full abortion ban on everything, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing is that there's a lot of people who have been traveling from their red states surrounding Florida to Florida in order to access abortion. So the Biden campaign is painting, even in their materials, this abortion ban in Florida as really an abortion ban that affects the greater Southeast region, right? Which includes places like North Carolina, where they can play, which includes Georgia, you know, that type of thing. So they get to use it for that. And then I think that it's metaphorically speaking, they think that they can use it as just a bigger issue. And there was, and they have Republicans on the run on it already. So Trump has not been willing to say how he's going to vote on the ballot measure, even though he's a Florida resident and will be voting on it. Right. Because God knows he's not going to miss a chance to go into the voting booth and cast a ballot for himself.
That's a good one, because he's been deflecting on a national ban, saying it's up to the states. It's up to the states. Well, congratulations. Yeah. Your state has one of these up. And for somebody who won't shut up about everything, for him to suddenly be all coy shows you how scared he is.
Yeah, how scared he is in his campaign. And he's been all over the freaking place, just to be clear. His campaign's starting to say, well, you know, Trump has always been, you know, in line with this idea that it should be up to the states and whatever. At the same time, he's done interviews recently where he said, oh, we're going to come to a compromise on a national abortion ban. Like there's some sort of compromise that is going to be, you know, that's going to be good on a national abortion ban, right? So he's, and he even said in, an interview a couple of weeks ago, I think on Fox that, or maybe it was Newsmax, that they would come up with it, and he wasn't quite sure what it would be, but he would be announcing it in the coming weeks. That might be one of those Trump announcements that like never actually happens, right?
You mean so like all of them? Infrastructure Week?
Exactly.
ACA, the Obamacare replacement.
Well, some points he was going to announce during his camp. I mean, I think his wife, Melania, was supposed to announce how she had legally gotten into the states or whatever. I'm not legally gained citizenship when he, I can't remember what the issue
very
was
sketchy
there.
But, circumstances and he was.
Yeah, very sketchy. There was going to be a big announcement about that. That announcement never happened. Yeah. So, and that was during the 2016 campaign. So, you know, but then you also have Democrats. So there not only is at the Senate level, are Senate Democrats looking at this, but I know the DTRIP, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the House arm of the Democratic Party, they are the campaign arm. They are looking at this, and they're looking specifically at two congressional candidates in the 13th district and the 27th district who have been, you know, on the record saying that they support abortion bans and whatever, who are now dodging reporter questions about whether or not they're going to vote for the ballot measure. So basically, from Trump down to Scott, all the way down to these congressional seats, these critical congressional seats, Republicans are on the run in the state. And so it makes sense, because what Trump does at the top of the ticket is so important, not just in Florida, but for the national election. It makes sense that you would press Florida as a major problem, abortion in Florida as a major problem for Republicans more broadly, because whatever Trump does there and however he approaches the Florida ballot measure has national implications. And I think that's a big part of what the Biden campaign is doing.
Yeah, and it's a conundrum for the Republicans. Either they spend money in Florida, which is money they can't spend elsewhere, or they don't spend money in Florida, thinking, like I said, if we lost Florida, like, we lost. So let's not bother. But then it tightens the race. It gives Democrats a unexpected boost to play in the state virtually uncontested. And it makes it easier to pick up seats in the Senate and the House. Now, Trump doesn't care about that. Trump's only going to look about himself. But for the broader party, it's sort of a lose-lose situation. And again, Democrats, they have all the money. If we lose in November, it ain't going to be because Biden and the party did not raise a lot of money. Right now, it's almost 3-1 cash on hand, you know, Biden and Trump campaign. I think at the last reporting period, it was $160 million with all the Democratic committees, $160 million in the bank. For the Republicans, it was around $60. And that was before Biden raised $25 million in one evening with Presidents Obama and President Clinton. There's no answer. Trump is literally golfing on the weekend. It's not like he's even out there campaigning or trying to raise money. He's golfing and grifting his own personal grifts. It gives us this incredible opportunity. So again, I don't think we're going to win Florida at the presidential level. We don't need to win it at the presidential level to, quote, win Florida, because there's a lot more happening on the ballot.
Right, exactly. And to make what's happening in Florida a national issue, which I think is, you know, I mean, look, I mean, people are very familiar with what's happening in Florida because Ron DeSantis was on the campaign trail and because, you know, Trump now lives there. And so it is sort of a center of gravity for the Republican Party. They are almost solely responsible for what's happening in that state. And so it's a great state to make an issue of, right? It's because the center of gravity for the Republican Party is there. So you get to, if you blow up the issues that are happening in Florida, you get to make a national case using those same issues.
Oh my God, that's a great point. And this is all the stuff that Ron DeSantis did trying to run for president, right? The book bans. When you think of book banning in the Republican Party, you're really thinking about Ron DeSantis in Florida. When you think about going after corporations for quote being woke or having quote DEI, which is the new N-word for the Republicans, that was Ron DeSantis literally in gutting leadership at key Florida universities and trying and going to war against Disney because Disney had gay week or something? Black Ariel, Princess Ariel.
Yeah. I think they made some statement in support of LGBTQ.
Yeah. People, oh, you know? Right. Don't say gay. Yeah. Right. Don't say gay. Like when you think about the hostility, that's Florida. So you go down a list. And of course, DeSantis has sort of cried uncle on that issue, right? They came up with a court ruling, court compromise, not compromise, but basic settlement. That's what it's
settlement. Settlement, right.
Which basically said, all right, you know what? Like, people can say gay. Like it sort of invalidated that whole.
People can say gay. It was a major concession.
Can you imagine they sort of entered the 1970s, you know, maybe in time. You're absolutely right. Florida is the epicenter, just like California is sort of the epicenter of the left, right? Florida is the epicenter of the right. And frankly, the headlines from not that California is getting all the great headlines, but it's nothing like Florida. Florida is freaking terrifying. It's scary. And yeah, you're right. I mean, between Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump being there and everything that Florida has created, it sort of does create sort of a center point of the MAGA movement. And if you can defeat parts of it there in Florida, can you imagine Republicans being competitive in any way in California? Like, no, it's not going to happen. We actually may make Florida weirdly competitive. So,
and in the last year have flipped some Republican seats in special elections. So it's not, you know, it's not completely inconceivable to have Republicans on the run there, and they are on the run on this abortion issue. And we should say too, that we are watching right now, and this, I'll make this last point and then we can be done with it. But we are watching right now as the fundamentals of the election start to shift, right? For the longest time before the State of the Union, Trump was pretty much leading the polls by anywhere from like 1 to 2 points to a handful of points, 6-7 points in national polling. And now you're watching that shave down, and Biden winning, you know, in the national head-to-heads more often than he was. And the most recent Morning Consult poll actually had Biden up, and they've had a tracking poll on the presidential for, you know, months, obviously. And the most recent one had Biden up and in a 6-point turnaround, like net turnaround, since I want to say 2 months ago. So Biden winning by 4 points versus being behind 2 points by 2 points about 2 months ago. So that's just one poll. But the you know, like when you look at the polls more globally, and I mean the good polls, not just the crappy Republican polls, but like, you know, the relatively respectable polls, you know, we're watching that as the Biden campaign brings in more money, leverages more advertising, gains momentum on issues like
building field offices. I think they're opening about 30 field offices in Florida. Trump has zero field offices in Florida because they can't afford them.
Speaking of Arizona last year at this time had the Republican Party in Arizona had like 60 staffers working in 2020 at this time, they had 60 staffers working on the presidential campaign in Arizona. And right now they have something like 5 or 10
and they're broke.
Or something
nothing. All across the country, they're broke. They're all broke.
Right. So the fundamentals are changing, and we're seeing it start to show in the polling, which is a lagging indicator of all the organizing, the money,
the messaging pushing through. I'll still say, don't worry about the polls until after the conventions, but it's always nicer.
Yeah.
So Carrie, that's our show for today. Thank you so much for this incredible conversation about Florida and our chances and why it matters. Even if Joe Biden does not win it, it still matters. Thanks to Walter for producing this show. Thanks to Perry for helping behind the scenes. And thank you, the viewer, listener, reader, activist, for being part of this movement to save our democracy. Whew! It's going to be a tough one, but it's very, very winnable. There's a lot of opportunities. I think we have the upper hand. We just got to really like twist that knife in the back of MAGA. Thank you so much for being part of that movement. Appreciate you all. Love you all. Catch you all next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.